Matthew chapter 2 is the familiar story about the wise men or the magi coming to visit Jesus. But they weren't just coming to visit Jesus to drop off a package of diapers for Mary and Joseph, you know, to take care of the baby. They had a very important thing to do there. It says they wanted to go see the child to worship him and to offer gifts of sacrifice and praise. And so I begin reading in Matthew chapter 2, beginning in verse 1 up through verse 12. And after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, magi, or the wise men, from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born, King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophets have written. But you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I may go and worship him too." And after they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. And on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. I want to talk today about five truths in this scripture that we see about the story of Christ and our call to worship Christ, God's Son. The first point is this: Jesus is the Messiah, the King of the Jews, and he should be honored as such. That's point one. Because he is a king, we need to honor him as a king. Second, Jesus is to be worshipped not just by the Jewish nation, but actually by all the nations of the world. And this is actually represented by the fact that the wise men from the east, who were Gentiles, the first worshipers of Jesus, maybe the shepherds and the angels, obviously, but these were the Gentile nations, and they were coming to worship the King of the Jews, but more than that, the Messiah of the world. Third, we understand as Christians that God directs his entire universe for one goal, and that is to make known his Son to the world so that we too can worship him. This is how God directs the world. When we see things that go on in our life and we are confused and we don't understand, and God allows some of that stuff, or allows it, because he has one goal in mind. And that is to get our attention, to help us understand that his Son is worthy of all our praise. Fourth, Jesus is troubling to people who do not see him as king and do not want to worship him. It troubles people. Look at King Herod. When he heard the news that a new king or Messiah was born, it troubled him. And fifth, we're going to talk a little bit about what it means to worship Jesus, ascribing to him authority and dignity, and with that comes the idea of sacrificing gifts to the Lord. Well, why would we do that? Did Jesus really need gold and frankincense and myrrh? Did Mary? I'm sure that was probably nice of them. They probably felt, well, you know, our needs are met. But really, it wasn't about giving something. Jesus doesn't need anything. He is the Lord of the universe. So why give him sacrificially like they did? Well, we'll talk about that at the end here. But first of all, Jesus is the Messiah, the King of the Jews, and he should be honored as such. Verse 2 clearly announces or tells us what the main point of Matthew's story is. Where is the one born King of the Jews? That is what the Magi ask Herod. It's about a newborn child destined to be the king of the Jews. Now, in itself, that doesn't seem like an extraordinary or great thing. For example, somewhere living in the United States right now, there's probably 3 or 4 young children who are going to end up growing up to be perhaps the president of the United States. Do we have people running around looking for these children now? No, we don't know who they are. Nobody really cares about them now. But verse 4 makes clear what the Magi really mean about the King of the Jews. They say, Matthew writes, when he called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of law, he asked them, where is the Christ to be born? Now, the Christ, what does that mean? Well, you know, Herod, he was actually called King of the Jews for over 40 years while he was reigning there. But no one called him the Messiah, which is what the word Christ means. Messiah means the long-awaited, God-anointed ruler who was going to be above all the rulers. He was going to bring an end to the history. He was going to establish his kingdom on earth, and he was never going to die and never lose his reign. That's what it meant to be the Messiah. Now, we're not sure how the wise men got their information. We can speculate there, but Herod got the message. This was more than just King of the Jews. This was the Messiah of all the nations. These fellows were not searching for a mere mortal, ordinary human to succeed him. They are searching for the final king to end all the kings. And so he asked the scribes. Hey, got together the smart people in his, I like to do that too sometimes, get together smart people and make my life easier. That's why when it comes to singing a Christmas carol, I call upon Llewellyn to play the piano and anybody else who has any talent to sing. I like to do things smarter. But Herod calls the scribes together and he says, and they say, oh, Herod, look in Micah chapter 5 verse 2. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Now this doesn't sound super extraordinary either. The only reason the scribes actually asked the question was because Herod asked the question, where? You think they would have went on in chapter 5 of Micah and read some more stuff there, but they kind of stopped there. It says, his going forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. In other words, speaking about Jesus is just not coming into the world because of the womb of a woman, Mary, but he is the Lord of the universe already. So this king is not so much more. John's gospel says, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He will be great to the ends of the earth. So this is the first truth, and this is why we people, the Christians, obviously, but all the peoples of the world are to worship the Lord of the universe, Jesus. He's the Messiah. That's point two. Jesus is to be worshipped not just by the Jews, but by all nations. And we see this because the wise men came from the east. Matthew doesn't even record about the angels and the shepherd. He goes right to the Magi story, because he wants us to realize that all nations are to worship God. So Matthew's gospel portrays Jesus at the beginning of his gospel and at the end of his gospel. He is the universal Messiah for all the nations. Here the first worshipers are the court magicians or the astrologers or the wise men from the east, whatever you want to call them. Perhaps they are from Babylon. We don't know for sure. But they were Gentiles. They were unclean. And yet, they came to worship. And here we see at the end of Matthew, we see where he says, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. Point three. God's universe. God directs his universe to make known his Son so that we, his creation, can worship him. That is the big goal. That is the great goal of all things, that his Son be known and be worshipped. Over and over again, the Bible baffles our curiosity about how these amazing things happen, about how God directed. For example, how did the star get the Magi from the east to Jerusalem? It does not say that it led them, or it only says that a star in the east, and they followed it and came to Jerusalem. And how did that star stop over Bethlehem, the 5-mile walk from Jerusalem to Bethlehem that the Magi took there right at the end? It says it stopped over the place where the child was. The answer is, we don't know the answers to that. There are numerous ways we could try to explain these physical phenomena we see out there, the conjunction of the planets and the comets and the stars. Some people get hung up on things like that. You know, they want to know, how did the Red Sea part? How did God provide manna in the desert? How did Jonah survive 3 days in the fish? How did Jesus turn water into wine? Those are all incredible miracles. And that would be right in the category of the Star of Bethlehem leading the Magi to Jesus. But I caution you not to get hung up on the peripheral things that are difficult to explain. But we do understand that these things didn't happen by themselves. God directed those events. It's important for us to think, to consider more the important aspects of the gospel. For example, the holiness of God, the sinfulness of man, the helplessness of man, how the death of Christ and how his resurrection affects our lives, the justification by faith, the work of the Holy Spirit, Christ's return to earth as King. These are the things that we need to focus on. But what is plain is that the star, it didn't do it by itself. God directed so that the Magi could worship his son. Let's face it, there's mysterious things that happen in our lives, right? We can't explain them. We wish we could sometimes. You know, could be things like sibling rivalry. Could be like, I don't know, why did I lose that job? You know, why? These things that happen in our lives, and we can't explain them all the time. But remember, God is directing the universe. And he wants us to worship him. And sometimes he does things in our life that help us to wake up. Fourth, Jesus is troubling to people who do not want to follow him or to worship him. This is probably not the main point of Matthew, but it's an inescapable story that we can talk about here for a second. In this story, there are two types of people who do not want to worship Jesus. The first kind of the people who simply want nothing to do with Jesus. Look at the chief priests and the scribes. They were called together and they started reading the scriptures and they found out where the Messiah was going to be born. And they told Herod. But after that, it was back to business as usual. Why didn't they go with the Magi? If this is the Messiah, the King of the Jews, why didn't they want to go? They were silent. They were inactive. And notice in verse 3, when Herod, the king, heard this, he was disturbed. These guys weren't disturbed, really, but the king was. They did not want to go and worship the true God. The second kind of people who do not want to worship Jesus is those who are deeply threatened by Jesus. This is Herod's story. He is so troubled, so threatened, that he schemes and he lies and ends up committing mass murder to just get rid of his competition. So today there are two kinds of opposition that will come against Christ and his worshipers. Those who are indifferent and those who are hostile to the gospel. My question is, are you in one of those two groups? I would think not. You're here on a church on Sunday, so. But let this be a Christmas when we consider the Messiah and ponder what it means to worship him. Let me close with the fifth truth. And that's about worship. Worshiping Jesus. And that is something that, quite frankly, probably none of us are very good at. I'll be honest with you. But we can learn some stuff from this passage here. First, I see the Magi ascribing authority to Christ, calling him who he really is, the King of the Jews. When a person says, you know, Jesus was a good teacher, or he may have been a prophet, or he was a moral man, these are the things that a lot of people say about Jesus. But that's dishonoring to him if you don't call him what he really is, the King of the Jews, the Messiah of the world. That begins our worship of God. Second, I see the Magi ascribing dignity to him by actually falling down before him and worshiping him. It says in verse 11, they came to a house, and when they saw the child with Mary, his mother, they fell to the ground and they worshiped him. So first, they understood his true identity. Second, they bowed down before him. Falling to the ground is what you do to say to someone else, you are high and I am low. You are of great dignity. I am lowly by comparison. And we always have to remember that about Jesus. Remember, he is beyond creation. He was before the creation. As a matter of fact, the scriptures say that it is through the creation that he formed the creation through Jesus. He was with the Father in heaven before any of what we see around us or experience was. He spoke and it came into existence. He is creator and sustainer. Third, and this has to do with the candle of joy, which is this Sunday. I see joy in the declaration of the Magi as they bowed down and they acknowledged Christ for who he is. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. As a matter of fact, the NIV really puts a damper on this. If you go back into the real, go back, it actually can be translated, rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. So it wasn't just, oh, you know, I won a gift certificate or something. Nothing like that. This was beyond imaginable joy that they felt. It was like over the moon joy, I guess you'd say. I'm trying to think of my life, you know, probably at each birth of my children, I felt like maybe I approached that exceedingly overwhelming joy. I don't know. I was happy that day for sure. But why were the Magi so overwhelmingly filled with joy? They were coming to realize the end of their journey, in a sense, because they finally were going to meet the King of Kings. So the conclusion is that true worship is just not ascribing honor and authority and dignity to Christ. It's doing it joyfully. And fourth, what about the sacrificial gifts? Here's the one that really, you know, as we go to any Christmas pageant, we see the young children come up here. You see the shepherd, you see the angels, you see the wise men bringing their gifts to the baby Jesus. And then we kind of condense it all down because, you know, the Magi probably came when Jesus was a little bit older, but we, you know, how we like to smush everything into a half hour. So we do that. But we know that God is not served by human hands, and Jesus is God. He doesn't need anything. The gifts the Magi are giving to the Jesus, it's not a care package. Oh, by the way, I'll get to that announcement later, but it's not a care package for Jesus. It would be actually dishonoring if you were to visit a royalty from someone, you know, you don't give them something that you think they need. They have everything they need. It's not a bribe. We're not bribing. The Magi aren't coming to, oh, hopefully I can get something good things from Jesus when he's older or something. Remember, hey, Jesus, don't forget when I brought you that bar of gold. No. These gifts are a symbol to Christ about our desire for him. It's a way of saying, the joy I pursue is not in the hope of getting rich because I know you. I have not come for the things that you give me. I come for you. And I demonstrate that by giving up something that I could really use. So that it's a way of saying that I could really enjoy this, but instead I'm sacrificing it because you're more important than those things. By giving to you, Jesus, what you do not need, and what I might enjoy, I am saying most earnestly and most authentically, you are my treasure, not the things of this world. I think that's what it means to worship God. When the Magi come, and they bring their gifts of gold and their frankincense, and their myrrh. So Lord, you are the Messiah, King of Israel. All nations will come and bow before you. You rule the world so that we might worship you. Therefore, whatever opposition comes my way, help me find the joy and ascribe to you the dignity and authority and the honor you deserve. And we bring our gifts to say that you alone can satisfy our hearts. Amen.